Maybe it's just human nature to think in terms of the weather we're getting now. It's really hot now, so it's really easy to think about global warming. The point is to continue thinking about it, even when the daily forecast does not encourage such thinking. Medford will be the setting for a regional climate summit about 3.5 months away. The Rogue Basin Climate Summit comes with the title Our Critical Climate. It features speakers from around the region, including Eugene Mayor Kitty Piercy. Southern Oregon Climate Action Now, or SOCAN, is the sponsoring agency or a sponsoring group. Alan Journay is the SOCAN co-coordinator back in our studio today. Alan, welcome back.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, Jeff. I really appreciate it.
So why a climate summit?
Well, essentially what we're doing is we're recognizing that there are patterns that are happening across the region, patterns of temperature. And as you say, we should not really associate just because we're going through a warm period right now that this is a consequence of global warming. But let's be honest, the patterns that we're seeing are consistent. In Medford, for example, we have seen over the last, well, I haven't, and I doubt you have either, but since the beginning of the last century, we've seen the temperature rise. I'm referring now to NOAA, National Weather Service data. Temperatures have risen in Medford nearly 2 degrees Fahrenheit over that period of time. There are patterns that we are seeing throughout the area that are most likely a consequence of that. Talking about heat waves, in fact, the number of days in Medford over 100 degrees has risen from about 7 to about 10, and the pattern we're experiencing now is entirely consistent with that, of course. Other patterns we're seeing, of course, are reduced snowpack. Precipitation has remained about the same, but snowpack has fallen about 50% over that period of time. Most of that decrease in snowpack has happened since about the 1970s, and that's consistent with all of the patterns we see in terms of climate around here. Most of them have really taken off since about the 70s, and the same is true if you look globally at any of these patterns. So we're experiencing, because the temperature is rising, we're experiencing reduced water availability, and as most folks know, in this area, our late summer, fall irrigation water comes from snowmelt. Snowmelt is happening earlier. Snowpack is dwindling, so we're getting less irrigation water, which is a problem for agriculture, and it is a problem for wildfires and drought as well. What we see is the U.S. Forest Service does, not surprisingly, studies on wildfire, and the two factors that are most correlated with wildfires and probably causative are temperature. In fact, a temperature rise of just 1 degree Fahrenheit over the annual record is the most significant contributor to wildfire increase. And the other is early snowmelt. Not surprisingly, if the snow melts early, by the time we get to late summer and fall, there's less moisture in the soil. So those things combine to contribute to increased wildfire risk. And I suspect there's nobody around here in Southern Oregon who is unaware of the fact that the fire risk has been high for the last couple of years, and all the fire folks in the Forest Service are constantly saying, this is going to be a bad year. It may not. We may sort of miss the bullet.
But accidentally, but yes.
Yeah, yeah, the expectation is, and we heard this last year, and this year again, this could be the worst fire year ever. All of those things are contributing to our lifestyle here. They're problems that we're facing. And so what we have decided to do at Southern Oregon Climate Action Now is organize a conference for the Rogue Basin, for the whole basin, in which we are focusing on what the problems are and what we might be able to do to address them. That's the focus of the conference.
To address them locally, then, or regionally?
Regionally. Do what we can regionally to make our lives less problematic. That's the key.
Alan Journay is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the co-coordinator of SOCAN, Southern Oregon Climate Action Now. We're talking about the summit coming up in October called Our Critical Climate, Trends, Impacts, and Solutions, a Rogue Basin Summit coming to the Inn at the Commons in Medford, October 13th and 14th. And I guess there's a registration deadline coming up. Yes. We'll deal with that in a moment.
Okay.
But you can call Alan. You can talk to us about climate change here on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone anywhere in the area, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So about the point of addressing climate locally, because mm-hmm. it is global climate change,
yes,
global warming. There, I'm sure, are a few people who are thinking, well, what can I do?
Well,
what can I do monthly, daily, weekly, whatever?
Well, what we really want to do is ask people. Well, we have a session in the conference in which we have invited local folks who are actually engaged in doing things to reduce the problem or prepare to overcome the problem. And the focus of the conference is on the second afternoon when we have breakout sessions. What we're asking folks who register for the conference to do is pick one of the breakout sessions and engage in discussion about what more we can do to help ourselves overcome the problems. And part of the issue is what can we do to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. But another part of it is what can we do in our lives to allow us to live in a comfortable way without being overly impacted by the inevitable climate change that's coming.
So it's about reducing impacts in the first place, primarily.
Well, it's what we're trying to do is help get people to think about what we can do to make our lives as comfortable as it now is. That's the main part of it. But the other part is certainly we are contributing to the problem, but we're asking people to think about what we might do to decrease that impact. And a big arena there is what can we do to reduce our consumption of fossil fuels, the main problem.
You've got some fairly impressive speakers here. And as we already mentioned, Kitty Piercy, the mayor
yes.
of Eugene. What will she be speaking about?
Eugene is possibly one of the leading, if not the leading, city in Oregon that's addressing the whole issue. And another speaker is Phil Moat, who is the director of the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute at OSU. And I would say of Phil Moat, if there is anything happening in Oregon, almost the entire Pacific Northwest, that is related to this climate change problem, Phil probably has a hand in it. He is absolutely the leading understander, let me say, of the issue in the Pacific Northwest and the consequences. And his focus, he's the keynote speaker, he's kicking off the conference. His task is to set the scene and explain why this is urgent. This is not something that we can put off and put off and put off. It's not something we can pretend is happening over there. This whole problem is confronting us here and now. And if we don't deal with both adaptation, preparation for the inevitable climate change, or take steps to solve the problem of what's causing it. If we don't do those, the outcome for the Pacific Northwest is going to be quite severe. And it's as I always say when I'm talking about the problem of climate change, it is our kids and our grandkids who are going to suffer the most, and on and on. So that's what we're encouraging people to recognize and to get involved in doing what we can.
I will take a wild guess that before you planned this climate summit on your own, you looked to see if there was something similar around, and it seems like these do tend to come from organizations like yours and not from governments and not collectives of people talking about, you know, what we can do in assemblies that already exist, as in governments.
I think that is probably true. And I think one of the reasons for that is folks who are in government have a bazillion things that they have to think about, whereas our organization is one which is focused on the issue of climate change. If you like, it's our passion, whereas people in government are elected to government and have a whole array of interests. And, you know, I don't necessarily blame them for that, because there's so much going on that people in government, whatever level, have to deal with.
All right. Alan Jornet is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the co-coordinator of SOCAN, Southern Oregon Climate Action Now, which has a climate summit coming to Medford in October. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Not surprisingly, we talk about global warming and the phone lines light up. Here's Casey from Jackson County. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Alan Jornet. Casey, go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if you could explain the significance of forests and the acts of people on the forest and how that might affect the climate change that we may be experiencing. And is it in fact a theory or is it a lie? Thank you.
All right. So theory or lie and forest activity. Nothing too small there.
Okay, one of the threads that we have running through the conference is a forest fire thread. Forests are really fascinating components of the whole problem, and there are two issues that are critical with forests. And one is the changing climate has an impact on forests. There are studies which have shown that if you look into the future, potential future for Oregon, there are some tree species which are commercially important, such as the lodgepole pine, which, if we go to the end of the century, operating on a business-as-usual model with the temperature changing, we find the lodgepole pine will be an unlikely part of the Oregon forest system. In other words, its climatic range will be north of Oregon. So there are critical impacts of climate change on the forests on one hand. On the other hand, forests are a very important component of the system because they are very clearly profound sequesterers of carbon, which is carbon dioxide is the dominant cause for the climate change we're seeing. So there are two issues. One is if we are going to address the problem of climate change, we really do need to factor into our forest management the component of carbon sequestration. So we need to manage our forests so that they sequester as much carbon as we can manage to afford them to sequester. So there are two sides of that issue. And, you know, I could go on a bit longer, but I'll turn to the other question if I can. Mm-hmm. I understood the second part of the question to be, is the whole question of fossil fuel-caused climate change, is it a theory or...
Is it a lie?
Is it a lie? Mm-hmm. Well, the way I would answer that one is as follows. If I had some heart problems, some chest problems, it started to hurt in my chest, and I went to 100 cardiologists, and 97 or 98 of them said, what you need to do is address your heart problem. And two or three of them said, no worry about it, nothing going on. I think I would be inclined to accept the advice of the 97 or 98. And so that's where I am on this issue.
All right. We should point out that Alan, too, was a scientist himself, a biologist for many years of teaching college at what is now Missouri State University. Anne and Eugene, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Alan Journay.
Thank you. One of the problems, big problems I see, is counties allowing residential buildings outside of incorporated areas, in forested areas, that are going to burn. And there's no risk to the county because they get the building permit fee, they get the property tax increase, but then people's lives are put at risk when those forests burn. Firefighters trying to protect these residential properties have died, you know, in large numbers. And the other thing is that the cost, which is borne by all of us, that these people who want to build in the woods residentially have put us to. And I would like to hear the... guest talk about that issue.
All right. Thanks for that, Anne. Appreciate that. So I, as I look through the stuff involved in the climate summit, I see there's a discussion of building construction and planning. But what about planning in the larger sense, land use planning? Is that a component of addressing global warming?
I think that's an important issue, and I certainly don't want to diminish the importance of that issue. And it certainly is true that we do have a tendency to want to live out in the country. And I guess I have to say I'm guilty of that desire, too. That is likely to come up both in the forest thread when we get to the breakout session on on forest issues, forest fires. I suspect that issue will come up, and folks will discuss what we might do to address that issue. I think a critical component of that is to encourage folks, and there may be a question of legislation involved in this, I don't know, planning. But one thing that can happen is people who live out in the wildland urban interface, or WUI as it's conveniently called,
right.
One of the things is you can build homes out in the that WUI area which are less fire susceptible and more fire susceptible, and there are a lot of things that can happen in that construction. And I know there are rules and regs out there because as we were building, we had to comply with them. These regs involve what's called the defensible space, the distance from the house.
30 feet, 100 feet, all these spaces.
Yeah,
of, you know,
you have to have an area around the house which is free, not totally free, but has a very scarce density of trees. And you can also build homes out in that area that are themselves resistant to fire. And those kinds of things include a reduction in wood, particularly external wood, not having fire susceptible roofs. So in our case, for example, we have a metal roof and sort of an adobe exterior.
So more about how you build them.
There's a lot of things we can do to reduce the danger of homes.
Alan Jornet, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange from Southern Oregon Climate Action Now, planning a climate summit in October. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here's John and Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange.
I want to mention first that people always focus on the highs.
Uh-huh.
My experience is that the lows have actually been more of the, you know, the lows are coming up more than the highs are going up. But my question was, I've noticed that over 3 of the last 4 years, Waldo Lake, which is up in the Cascades, has not frozen over. And the previous 35 years that I've been observing it, it has always frozen over during the winter. And so my question is there a place to get longer-term data? Ice on, ice off is kind of a classic climate indicator. And is that a tipping point? Have we seen a really huge change? Because suddenly we've gone to 3 out of 4 years where it didn't freeze, or is this just kind of an anomaly?
Well, let's find out. Thanks for the question, John.
In relation to the data from Medford, you can, which is where near where I live anyway, you can actually look at the data over the last 100 years or so, and what you're pointing out is exactly what the data show. The average temperature in Medford has risen, but it's not largely a function of highs rising. The lows have risen more, and of course, as you'll appreciate, that tends to move the average up. So what you're seeing is a trend, and you can get the data from NOAA for most places. I would think Eugene would be a good place to go to the local weather service office, and you could probably get those data, and I suspect they're online. They certainly are for Medford.
I do like to look at the climate thing every day to see, for example, what the highs and lows historically are. And in times, for example, like last week, seeing that Redding hit 112, it was not a record for the date. The record for the date was 117. So we're talking, it does get hot in June, but this is a long, long trend we've been having here.
Mm.
Let's take another call from Art in Klamath Falls. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Alan Jornet.
Hi. With regard to climate change, one of the concrete things we're trying to do here in Klamath is to form a people's utility district that would run our electric utility in place of Pacific Power, which is almost all coal and gas, and switch over to hydropower from the BPA. So this would get 50,000 people off of fossil fuel-based electricity and onto hydropower.
Okay. And then how's the work going with that?
We're spreading the word, and most everyone who hears about it seems to think it's a great idea, so we're going to try to get it on the ballot next year.
Okay, we'll keep our eyes open for that. Thanks for the call, Art. Appreciate it. Tim in Grants Pass, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking global warming with Alan Jornet.
Yes, one of the simple questions I've been asking, when a permits are issued for, say, a hillside little subdivision, how much research goes into what's going to cause in the diverting of groundwater to trees, the cutting of roots and systems for every road, culvert, and everything, because that's quite a problem around these small cities.
Okay, interesting question. Let's see if Alan has any expertise in that area. We're talking to land use planning again.
Yes, I'm afraid land use planning is not my strong suit by any stretch of the imagination. But I am constantly, I can say this, constantly amazed at how often the impact of those kinds of constructions, infrastructure, when we look at new subdivisions, is not considered. And I don't know why. It seems so obvious that we should be considering the impact of the infrastructure when a new development subdivision is planned. I don't think it's looked at enough.
So I understand that that you're trying to encourage people to register for the climate summit in October by the middle of July. Is that right?
Well, we have an early bird fee and a late bird fee, I guess. So the early birds can catch the worm. And the worm is that the registration fee is $45 for the early birds, and then it's $55 for the late birds. And the registration fee simply pays for the lunches and morning teas and coffees on the 2 days. We're not putting into this an excess registration fee to make a profit or anything like that. That's what we get from the Inn of the Commons, and so we're simply saying we'll charge the registrants what it's costing us.
Okay, $45 if you register now, $55 after July 15th, and then just a few seconds left here. What are you hoping comes out of the climate summit?
We're hoping that the region, the basin, will have more actions in place that will address the problems of climate change.
Okay, our critical...
The early bird registration, incidentally, is July 15th, and then registration at the moment closes September the 15th.
Okay, so still a while left to get into the climate
summit.
Can
we do the SOCAN Climate Summit is the web... SOCAN Climate Summit is the webpage.
Okay, I was going to say they're all linked from our website. If people just go to jeffexchange.org and look for the listing about this particular item, all the links are should follow right from there. Alan Journay from Southern Oregon Climate Action Now, always good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us on the
Exchange. Thanks so much, Jeffrey.